a comment or a question that you'd like to make, you're welcome. Just raise your hand. You can come up, take the microphone. We would appreciate if you do come up so people on Pal Talk can hear you. But to begin with, I'm going to start by reading some comments that people have submitted through the website after reading the track or hearing about May 21. The nice thing about the Judgment Day track is there's a contact email address on the back. And so somebody reading it, they could flip it over and they can write us and let us know what they think. And a lot of people are doing that. To put in comparison, before, maybe a couple years ago, we would get one or two every now and then, maybe a month, of emails from people who would read Did God Die for You or these other tracks we had. And for a long now, for many months, we're getting 10 of these a day, and sometimes it really picks up. And while we were gone, we got a few hundred, a couple hundred, at least 300 of these comments in just like a 10-day period. So people are reading it, and it's affecting them to the point where they are responding. And they're writing things like this. This one's from Louisiana. And a person writes, just wondering what you will do when the world is still around on May 22nd, 2011. I would challenge you to shut down your site and organization if you're wrong. Do you think you could better serve your fellow man by channeling your energy and finances to helping the less fortunate instead of spreading fear? I am in no way advocating that your site be banned. I'm a firm advocate of the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech and applaud your convictions. Well, kind of threw that in at the last second to balance it out, I suppose. But, when unsafe people hear about May 21, you know what they almost immediately think of? May 22nd. May 22nd, it's a very, very common response and reaction. They want to know, what are you going to do on May 22nd? Because they don't believe. They just immediately think it's not a possibility. There's no way that that God's people, I would say, are putting forth about May 21 will happen. It's unbelief. It's complete unbelief. And so to them, it'll come, it'll pass, the next day will follow. And, just seeing so many of these, I keep thinking about it because it comes in almost on a daily basis. May 22nd, what are you going to do? Why do they want to know what we're going to do on May 22nd? Why is that so insistent? Why do so many people want to talk about May 22nd? They don't really want to talk about May 21, but they want to talk about May 22nd. And these people are from, it could be from any, this is from Louisiana, it could be from anywhere in the world. You hear it in Ireland, you hear it in England, you hear it in America, you hear it from Nigeria, you hear it everywhere. May 22nd. The idea is that it's guaranteed May 22nd will come without any difference from May 21 or today or the days leading up to that time. In the minds of people, it's guaranteed. One person was very honest and actually wrote that. And he says, I guarantee you, I'll see you on May 22nd. He guaranteed it. And I thought immediately of the caravans that say on it, the Bible, May 21, 2011, Judgment Day, the Bible guarantees it. And a lot of people don't like that. Why not? Well, because it's matching the faith of the world. It's matching the confidence and the tremendous faith of people in the world in the continuance of this earth. The Bible says all men have not faith. That's faith in God, faith in Christ, faith in the Word. But men have faith in the ground under their feet. In this world, people have tremendous faith that they know, they can tell you and me and everyone, it'll be here without change. And so, God is saying at this time, I guarantee something. I guarantee something. May 21, 2011 will be the day of judgment. And on that day, what's going to happen? God will bring about the resurrection of the dead. And in order to do that, He's going to shake the whole earth. And I think it's going to accomplish a few purposes. One is to bring about the resurrection of the dead. He opens up the ground. The second big purpose is that man has trusted in this world to the point where it's an idol. He has great faith in the continuance of earth. And God immediately, on the day of judgment, the first of the 153 days, will shake that idol, will shake the whole earth. As He says in Isaiah chapter 2, and just to set the context, it says in Isaiah 2:10, enter into the rock and hide thee in the dust for fear of Jehovah and for the glory of His majesty. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and Jehovah alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of Jehovah of hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty, and upon everyone that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. And that's the day of the Lord, May 21. And then it's all continuing in the same context, but just to save a little time, it says in verse 17, and the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and Jehovah alone shall be exalted in that day, and the idols he shall utterly abolish, and they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of Jehovah and for the glory of His majesty when He ariseth to shake terribly the earth. See how God's connecting it to their throwing their idols away now, because He is going to shake the earth. You know, the problem with this world, and it's what God warned people about, is that it comes to an end. Love not the world, neither the things of the world. For the world, and it says in 1 John 2, 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world, and the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. It's just a quick statement. The world passeth away. That God will, on that day, October 21, when everything's destroyed, it's just like it passed away, as He says in Revelation 21:1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away. Now that's past tense, because God is giving John the vision or the revelation of what will happen. Of course, that was given in the first century A.D. And here we are in 21st century, And we're so close to this. We're only a few months away when Judgment Day will be here, and a few months after that, the world will pass away, as the Bible said it would. You know, you hand someone a track, and Judgment Day, May 21, and you see a smile sometimes come across their face, or a little laugh, and you can see it's like, this is unbelievable. This can't be. It's not possible. And you can see that on people's faces. And I just like to ask them, well, it's going to end someday, right? Isn't that true? Do you believe the Bible at all? Have you heard about what the Bible teaches, that there will be an end to the world? Do you really believe that? And funny, there was two guys in Belfast. They were doing their job. They were trying to get people to go on this tourist bus. And they were both there. And I asked that question. And one guy said, no, the world's not going to end. It's not going to end. The other guy said, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because I asked them, you know, do you think the world will come to an end? And then I said, well, you know, what does the Bible say? And the guy said, the Bible doesn't talk about the world coming to an end. And the other guy said, yes, it does. And that's a good thing to ask people. You do believe that, right? And if they have, you know, any understanding of the Bible, they'll probably say, well, yeah, I understand that. I agree. Someday the world will end. Then the next thing to say is, don't we qualify? Don't we qualify today with the sin that's in the world, with the condition of the church? And you know, we could go on to other things, but they may not be too familiar with them. But I think it's pretty common knowledge across the world, across the face of the earth, that we are living in an evil time that the world has never seen before. And so we qualify. You know, we fit the bill. If God destroyed the world, which he will on May 21, nobody could say, well, it's unjust. Nobody says that. You know, when you point out May 21, 2011 is Judgment Day, nobody says, that's not fair. They might say it personally or themselves, but nobody would say it because the world is doing good and making progress with our sins, with the evil things in the world. Nobody would say that. Everyone recognizes that, yeah, the world is actually involved in a lot of evil things that it's never been involved with before to this degree. Okay, does anyone have anything, or should I go? Yes, Lester.
To get to that person from Louisiana, I've been to Louisiana, I've been to New Orleans, and I know what goes on down there with that with the Katrina thing and all that, you know. And people are trying to get answers and stuff like that there. But when it goes down to it, compared to Katrina. This is going to be much worse than Katrina. And I think that you hit it right on the nail, Chris, that it's going to be a lot worse.
Right.
And
That's right. There's always disasters, hurricanes, floods. But yeah. Except for the flood of Noah's Day, they're normally isolated to a city, a state, a country. In this case, it's going to be everywhere. Every city, every state, every country in the world will experience the same thing. That is that worldwide earthquake. And look what happened to Haiti. And Haiti was devastated for months, even with all the world reaching out trying to help. And when May 21 comes, every country will be in that kind of condition or worse. No one will be able to help anyone else. And you know, it's going to be a horrible time of 5 months.
And so this is my final question. From the evidence from the Bible and from the evidence that I've seen, and I did my homework on everything, I think what's going to happen, I think that Mr. C is right, I think you're right, I think the Bible is right, because we can't put our trust in man, we can't put our trust in you, we can't put our trust in the camping. We have to put our trust in the Bible all the time and search these things out like the Marines do.
Yeah.
And I think what we should do is that, this is my question. I think we all should search the Bible and go by what the scriptures say, because there's evidence, there's lots of evidence. and these things are going to come to pass, and this is going to happen, mm-hmm. and all that, you know. And
all right.
And that's the warning, you know. That's what I'm saying.
All right, Lester. Yeah, thank you. That's good and good advice. Okay, anyone else have anything? Yes, Eddie.
Can you read Psalm 10, 17, and 18?
Psalm 10, 17 says, Jehovah, thou hast heard the desire of the humble. Thou wilt prepare their heart. Thou wilt cause thine ear to hear, to judge the fatherless and the oppressed, that the man of the earth may no more oppress.
My question is, the man of the earth here, is this speaking about the unsaved people, or is this speaking about Satan?
Well, here God is talking about his people, that he will prepare their heart, and God will have his ear ready to hear, you know, when the cry of the humble, the cry of the broken and contrite, that those individuals that are God's elect, that the Lord is drawing to himself at this time, God is, in other words, saying he's going to work it all out in the lives of these people. He will bring them to salvation, and because they are his elect, he will hear their cry. And it kind of follows from verse 17 into 18, to judge the fatherless and the oppressed. Now, the fatherless would be the orphan, who represents the child of God, mm-hmm. and also the oppressed is... God likens his people to being oppressed in this world. And the man of the earth, I haven't checked out that phrase, but I think it would be both, because Satan operates through unsaved people. And he stirs up people to bring affliction and to bring opposition to the true people of God.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Anyone on Pal Talk have anything? Okay. Here's another comment that came in. Okay, I understand your math for the year, but why May 21st? Also, why would you set a day? What if you are wrong? This could destroy your church. Best wishes. Well, number one is we're not a church. Family Radio has no affiliation with any church. E-Bible has no affiliation with any church. Actually, the Bible teaches the church age is over, and God's people should not go to church. That he doesn't want his people in church. He's commanding them to come out of the churches and the congregations, and God's wrath is on the churches of the world at this time. And so we're not trying to build up anything. We're not trying to get people to join anything. All we want to do is to share the warnings from the Bible so that people can be forewarned of what's coming. It's a good question, though. Yeah, it is kind of straightforward to understand the year, because we know that the flood was in 4990 B.C., and we also know that 2 Peter 3 tells us use one day as 1,000 years and 1,000 years as one day, and that's in the context of God speaking of the flood in the early verses of 2 Peter 3, and then in the later verses he's talking about the end of the world by fire, and right in the middle, 2 Peter 3:8, but beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. And as we go to the flood account, and we find in Genesis 7, verse 4, that verse that many of us are familiar with, but not all, it says, "For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, And every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. Now, that 7-day period, God is tying in with the one day is 1,000 years. And he's basically saying you have historically 7 days to get into the ark. Spiritually, the world has 7,000 years to find refuge in Christ because the ark typified him. And it has to be fitted to this verse because 2 Peter 3 has the context of the flood. Now, some people, they go on to say, well, yeah, but Genesis 7 also talks about it rained 40 days and 40 nights. Are you going to say that's 40,000 years? And no, because God is the one who identifies the one day as 1,000 years with this verse and not with the other information. For instance, that language of a day is 1,000 years is only found one other place in Psalm 90. And it says in verse 3, Thou turnest man to destruction and sayest, Return, ye children of men. For 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in a night thou carriest them away as with a flood. The only two instances in the Bible where God speaks of a day and 1,000 years, 2 Peter 3 and Psalm 90, in both cases he mentions the flood. So we don't try to apply it in other places in the Bible where days are given or anything like that. It only fits Genesis 7 and verse 4. And why only verse 4? Why not the 40 days? Because God has locked it in and confirmed it a little later in that chapter. After the 7-day period, we find in Genesis 7, in verse 11, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And that's the day that Noah and his family enter into the ark. And in verse 16, and they that went in male and female of all flesh, as God had commanded him, and Jehovah shut him in. He closed the door of the ark. Noah didn't close the door. His sons didn't close the door. God closed the door. And in doing that, God is saying, okay, you have 7 days. And after 7 days, the flood comes and I shut the door. Or I shut the door and the flood comes. And that's it. That's it. There's no more opportunity to get into the ark. And we know from looking elsewhere in the Bible that Christ is the door. Right? He's the door to heaven. He's the only portal. There's no other entry into heaven except through him. And when God shuts that door, there's no more salvation. Salvation is finished. It's complete. And that's why when we do look at that 7,000-year timeline from the flood that goes from 4990 B.C. until 2011, that 7,000-year period ends on May 21 because May 21, 2011, is the 17th day of the second month of the Hebrew calendar. Of the biblical calendar. And that day is also the 8400th day of the 23-year Great Tribulation period, coming at it from a totally different perspective. As we knew, the Great Tribulation would be for 23 years for some time. And we also knew when the Great Tribulation began. And 23 years later, to the very day, it ends. And that happens to be the 17th day of the second month in the Hebrew calendar. That's God telling us we understand the 7,000 years correctly. We understand what it means with the door being shut. It's the end of salvation. And then when we look at other scriptures about the door being shut, we find the time of weeping and gnashing of teeth takes place. And that's how, Mr. Camping learned, and we all learned, and that the 5 months of torment is actually that period of judgment on man for their sin, because we understood time first and then the judgment, as God began to teach us that. Okay, thank you for submitting your comment and question. Does anyone here have anything? Yes, John.
Hi, Chris. I'd like for you to look at Hebrews chapter 3.
Hebrews 3.
17 through 19.
17 says, "But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness, and to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believe not?" So we see they could not enter in because of unbelief.
Now we see, we could see how ancient Israel had sinned and continued to transgress God's law, and continue to murmur and complain. So how does this compare? We see how God dealt with them by not allowing them to enter, and they were killed in the wilderness. So when you compare to how God is dealing with us through the church age, how he dealt with us to the church age, when it says we can't, they do not enter into his rest, is that like the unbelief or having high places, whereas though we didn't really study and obey God's word the way we should have?
Well, God makes a point of letting us know that the Jews who came out of Egypt, that the overwhelming vast majority of them perished due to unbelief in the wilderness, and meaning that they were not saved, all the males 20 years old and above, and except for a handful of men like Joshua, Caleb, a few others, that the rest perished. And that tells us one thing, that that salvation is of the Lord, and nothing will make a person believe outside of God changing their heart. So we can't convince anyone. Evidence won't make someone believe, as some people, they want to hear more and more evidence. You sure May 21 is going to be Judgment Day? Yeah, here, read this track. They read the track. Okay, what else? And it's good. We want to give as much biblical evidence as possible. But the truth is that if you can pile a whole encyclopedia or a phone book of evidence, of biblical evidence, at someone's feet, and that won't convince them, even though it's all true and faithful. Like the Jews, they saw the hand of God basically take the greatest nation on earth at that time, Egypt, and bring them low. It was a devastation when God brought the plagues on Egypt. And they were miraculous plagues. And God, through Moses and Aaron, told Pharaoh and the Egyptians repeatedly, and the Jews, what he was about to do. He would say, "Tomorrow, at this time, will the plague be?" He followed that pattern of forewarning. And again, the frogs and lice and the waters turning to blood and the death of the firstborn, they were all miracles. They were miraculous. And then God, when Pharaoh would seemingly repent, at least of that judgment, God would immediately take them away. So it was obvious. This is the hand of God. And it didn't save any of the Egyptians, and it didn't save any of the Israelites who saw them. And then they came out of Egypt, and they went to the Red Sea, and the Red Sea parted. They crossed over as on dry land. They had manna fall every day in the wilderness, miraculously. Just think of that. You're in a wilderness. There's no food. And every day you go and you search and you find a omer of manna or whatever the measurement was. And there it is. Or they saw water come out of a rock like a river. Their shoes didn't go bad, didn't wear away for the length of time they wandered. Again and again and again, God showed that He is God. And as a result, well, they didn't enter into His rest because they believed not. That is telling us that it takes a miracle. It takes God to change a heart, to give belief. And it's the same for the church in Hebrews 4. It says for the New Testament people in verse 1, "Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into His rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it." Not their own faith, the faith of Christ. There has to be Christ's faith to save. And they didn't have it. And many in the churches throughout the church age never had it. And today, the church worldwide doesn't have it. They don't have it, and so they're going to perish. And just like the Jews, they might be trusting that they're a professed Christian, like the Jew would trust he's a child or a descendant of Abraham. And that doesn't save anybody. Doesn't save anyone to, be associated outwardly or corporately with God. There's no way around it, in other words. Ye must be born again.
Right.
There's no way around that. And being a Christian isn't going to get anybody into heaven.
We didn't have a clear understanding on a lot of the doctrines of the scriptures during the church age, but now he's using, being as he opened up the Bible, opened up the believer's understanding, that he's using these new doctrine that really wasn't formally understood winnow out the wheat from the tares.
Yeah, it's a test for many, many people. And many have failed the tests of annihilation. That is, the Bible teaches annihilation, not eternal damnation. And people got angry, upset about that, and left. That they really left the truth, and they went away. Or people got upset about Christ being slain before the foundation of the world. And see, God develops these kinds of tests, and they're really targeted to reach the proud heart of man. And no child of God should have a proud heart. It should be a broken, contrite, humble heart, because that's the heart that'll pass the test. That's the heart God gives after His own. And the child of God might initially resist, but then he's going to say, look, as he looks at the Bible, oh, I see it, and I maybe it doesn't it's not comfortable, or something like that. But the child of God will be humbled because God will make sure, and they'll continue to endure to the end. But anyone who's not elect, not a true believer, even though they can understand many things, they're going to fall away at some point. It also says, and this is really the whole issue in John, or the fourth gospel, chapter 8. It says in verse 47, and Christ is declaring this, "He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God." And that's the simple truth. So in other words, we can go to a person and hand them a tract, and they read it, May 21, and they're stunned, and it impacts them greatly, and they realize this is true. This is going to happen. And and God, you know, leads them to the truth. They immediately they hear it, they believe it. It doesn't take anything more. And like the Ninevites, when Jonah went into Nineveh, yet 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown, period. The Ninevites didn't have the luxury of proving it, of following up on it, of obtaining more information about it. They simply believed. And not Jonah, but God. It says in Jonah 3:5, the Ninevites believed God, or the men of Nineveh believed God. Why did they believe? Well, this verse explains, he that is of God heareth God's words. My sheep hear my voice. And on the other hand, prior to the flood, Noah preaches to the whole world. Nobody believes it, except for those in his own family. Why didn't they believe it? He is a very diligent, faithful man. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord, a preacher of righteousness. You probably couldn't have found a better example of a believer. And they watched him closely as he built that ark. And still, nobody believed it outside of his family. Why not? Because they were not of God. And it comes down to that. And that helps us, or should help us, when we're sharing the information. We have to pray. Oh, Lord, open up their eyes, open up their ears. And we should never strive and argue or fight with someone about it who doesn't see it. Because we're never going to make them see it. We're never going to convince anybody.
Chris, what happened to, would you think, those people that would teach a free will gospel, before we have come into this information about work, faith and belief as a work, the ones that who have passed on?
You mean throughout
the church age?
The church age, people who taught free will gospel, well, they weren't teaching the true gospel. It could be one explanation as to why those saved during the church age were, you know, the numbers weren't all that great.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, I have time for one more if anyone has anything. Bob? Ezekiel 13:18 says, I don't think so. And say, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, woe to the women that sew pillows to all armholes and make kerchiefs upon the head of every stature to hunt souls. Will ye hunt the souls of my people? And will you save the souls of alive that come unto you? It has something to do with a false gospel. But I can't explain sewing pillows, armholes, and the kerchiefs upon the head, except God says to hunt souls. And a little further on, 19, and will you pollute me among my people for handfuls of barley and for pieces of bread, to slay the souls that should not die, and to save the souls alive that should not live, by your lying to my people that hear your lies. So it's a false gospel. And a false gospel works opposite of the true gospel. It's like murder to the child of God. Have you ever been in a church and they're explaining salvation, and is it that easy? You just accept Christ. You just walk down the aisle. You're uncomfortable about it. There's something that doesn't sit right about it. And eventually it leads you out of that church, and, you know, or they drive you out of that church. And that would be what the Bible speaks about killing. And on the other hand, the unsaved in the churches, they have no problem following the doctrine. They have no problem accepting Christ or doing whatever the church requires. Baptism, saying the sinner's prayer. There's no difficulty there. And so they're saving the souls alive that should not live, because they're not elect people. But the church is telling them, you're a child of God. You're now accepted in God's sight, and He'll bring you into heaven. Well, further on, let's just read it, because it mentions kerchiefs again. Verse 20, wherefore thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I am against your pillows, wherewith ye there hunt the souls to make them fly, and I will tear them from your arms, and will let the souls go, even the souls that ye hunt to make them fly. Your kerchiefs also will I tear, and deliver my people out of your hand, and they shall be no more in your hand to be hunted, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah. Now God's accomplished that today, when He commanded His people to come out of the churches. He's taken them out of the clutches of the pastors, who instead of feeding the flock are feeding themselves of the flock, as it says in Jeremiah. And then it says in verse 22, because with lies ye have made the heart of the righteous sad, whom I have not made sad. And again, you know, the believer hears the false teaching, the false doctrine, the false gospel, and it's distressing to them. Can you remember, like, sitting there and wondering, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I'm in the church, and everybody has that joy of the Lord, and apparently, and they're telling the way of salvation, but it doesn't seem to work with me. It doesn't seem to fit me. Well, it's because it was all false gospel. It was all wrong. And it sorrowed the heart of the true believer. But God goes on to speak about the wicked and how the churches are really dealing with those that are unsaved. In verse 22, the second half, and strengthen, that is, the lies. Because with lies... you have made the heart of the righteous sad, whom I have not made sad, and strengthen with the lies the hands of the wicked, as the hand represents the will of people. You strengthen the hands of the wicked, that he should not return from his wicked way, by promising him life. Now, there is free will clear and, you know, God's addressing that whole doctrine right on the head. This is exactly what churches do. Do this, you will live. Right? When Billy Graham or someone like that gives a crusade, come forth and you'll live. Come down the aisle, you'll live. Do what the church tells you to do. Follow these steps and you will live. And God is saying, look, it's a lie. It's a lie. And here's what you're actually accomplishing. You're strengthening the will of those people to be satisfied in their unsaved state. You're strengthening their will where now they're going to have no interest in right salvation. Like someone who comes by you on a street corner when, you know, we'd hand out the Does God Love You tract. And there's the question, does God love you? Oh, please give that to the person behind me, because I'm a child of God. I accepted Christ. Oh, thanks, but I don't need that. Their hands are strengthened. In their sinful condition, they believe they have life because they've been promised. The church has promised them they will live, and it's the big reason why on May 21, so many are crying out, Lord, Lord, in amazement, did we not do the things that you would have us to have done? Well, according to your church, yes. According to the Bible, no. No, you depart from me, ye workers of iniquity, because they tried to get right with God through their works. I never knew you. The church knows you. The church made this promise, but God's not obligated to keep the church's promises. He's not obligated to uphold what every church out there tells people when it's a lie. So, you know, don't, and people will on that day get angry with God, but really they should be angry with their church. And they should be angry at the stuff they've been fed, the teachings that they've heard, and not God. You know, God is telling people, come out of the church. Get out of there as quick as you can. And it's for each individual person's own good. All right, let's stop here, and we'll have a word of prayer, and we'll take like a 5-10 minute break and come back.